session number 10764, Reel 3.
Mr. Nye, Reel 3. You were just saying that you took a doctor across.
Yes. We lowered the whaler and took the doctor across to the ship. And the Martin came as close as she could alongside this Bolshevik star. And we were playing horses on it to dampen the fire down or try and keep the fire under control, while the doctor was aboard trying to, or not trying to, but he was assisting the wounded that there was aboard there. And the thing that surprised us was the number of females that were aboard these Russian ships and crew. I would say at least 50% of them were females, which rather surprised us, you see. And they were going through the same hazards and the terrifying experiences that most of us were going through on those convoys. And we took off, I believe there must have been about 7 or 11 of them, between 7 and 11, badly wounded people, Russians, off the ship, back to HMS Martin.
Was this a merchant ship?
Merchant ship, yeah. She was very badly damaged. But needless to say, the fire was kept under control and she made it to Murmansk, where we, I think we put ashore two of these Russians that we took aboard died. And the others we put ashore in Murmansk when we arrived there. That was one incident that I recall.
Which of the four convoys was that on?
That was 18. PQ-18.
What were the weather conditions like on the Arctic convoys? Were you just doing them in summer?
They did them in winter as well.
Did you go out in winter?
Yeah.
Can you describe the winter conditions?
Well, what I would say about the conditions in winter, summer was bad enough, but in winter it was dark, perpetually dark. And the temperatures were well below freezing, so much so that the guns used to seize up. And as the spray come over the bows, the sea spray come over the bows, used to freeze. So one was employed during whatever short spell we had was to chip away the ice off the gun mountings, get working parts working again. Very, very difficult, really. Very, very difficult and very, very harsh. Climatic conditions were something that I had never experienced in my life before, never. The winds were terribly strong. And there was always a gale. You can get a gale within minutes, blow up. And, you know, you were literally rocking and rolling all over the place. And on destroyed was sheer hell. The seas were very, very rough. And if you lost anybody over the side, you were only in there about 2 or 3 minutes and you were dead. You were frozen. Very, very difficult. Very harsh conditions.
Which did you prefer, the winter convoys or the summer ones?
The winter ones were only mainly U-boat attacks. But the summer ones you had all. Winter, you had the dive bombers, high-level bombers, torpedo bombers coming in at you all day long. And then you had also had to contend with U-boats during the daylight hours. But in the winter it was mainly to do with U-boats. There wasn't so many air attacks.
So summer was more dangerous?
More dangerous, but yeah. But the elements were against you in the winter, yeah.
Which did you fear most, U-boat attacks or air attacks?
It's hard to say, really. Because with the U-boat, you couldn't see it. With an air attack, you could, and you could say with Thompson, the captain we had, he was a brilliant man. they used to literally dodge the bombs coming down. But with a torpedo, you just can't see it. And this is where it probably became a little bit more scary. Think U-boat attacks. Although you got a lot more air attacks more frequently than you did the U-boat attacks. But at least if a merchant ship was hit, you had an inclination as to where it came from. So you could pick her up on ASDIC and you can have a go yourself at the sub that done it.
You were telling me earlier that the Martin was eventually lost off North Africa.
That's right,
in November 1942, when the North African landings occurred. Can you describe to me what happened at the North African landings from your own personal memory of it?
Well, I didn't see anything to do with the... I didn't see anything concerning the landings itself. We were on a destroyer screen covering the main fleet, and the objective was to bombard. But unfortunately for us, at 3:03 in the morning, November the 10th, we left Scapa Flow and proceeded to Liverpool, fueled up in Liverpool, and then sailed to Gib. And it wasn't until we got to Gibraltar that we realized what was going to take place very shortly, and that was Operation Torch, which was the invasion of North Africa. And when we saw the convoys coming through, you know, we knew there was going to be something really big. We weren't given any shore leave in Gib or anything like that. We just lay alongside a tanker, fueled up, and sailed. And we were on the screening force, actually, to the battle fleet. Then on the morning of the 10th November 1942, at 3:03, there was three explosions on the starboard side of the ship. And this was the first time that I'd ever been torpedoed. And I never ever want to experience anything like it again, because a destroyer would only take one fish, she wouldn't take three of them. Fortunately for me, I was in B-gun turret, and the flap screens, gun layers positions were down. And when I heard the first explosion, which was aft, the ship shook. And then one realized that one had been torpedoed. But within seconds, there was a second and a third. And all I saw in front of me, looking through my gun layers screen, the flap being down, was this terrific blinding red flash go across, and the whole of the bows disappeared. So everybody that was down below at that time off watch didn't know what happened. They died instantaneously. And all I remember was the ship lurching over to about 45 degrees, and people were trying to get out of the gun turret that I was in. But I don't remember a great deal, really, because I got hit on the head by a 4.7 shell that hit me on the head. And I must have been knocked unconscious. And this is why, as I was talking to you early on, I said I'd like to find Jackie Amphlett, because he's the boy that pulled me out of the gun turret. And she was so badly keeled over to once to the starboard side that when the turret door was opened and he got me out of here, my face was touching water. And he got me out of the turret and left me. By this time, I suppose that the water hitting my face revived me. And I remember looking up at the sky, because the ship was still burning. And I remember looking up at the sky, and I could see the guardrails above me. And all I remember doing was putting my hands up, grabbing the guardrails, and literally pulling myself up, getting over this onto the side of the ship by now, and I just slid down into the water. And the first thing that comes into one mind is survival. Got to get off this ship as fast as I can, because being sucked under as she was going down. I swam off. I had overalls on, boots on, and the first thing I did was to get these off as soon as I got off, as far away from the ship as I could, so that I was a little bit lighter. And when I looked back at the to see if the ship was still there, I could see the flames just coming out before she actually finally went under. And I saw a collie raft. And I swam back to this collie raft, and there was this sailor, Jackie Amphler, sitting on there, singing "The Sailor with the Navy Blue Eyes." And I recognized his voice, and I swam back to him, and I said, "Jack, get me out of this." So he tried to grab hold of my arms. Well, if you're covered in oil, no way can anybody pull you up, you see. So I said, "If you go down to my waist," I said, "you'll find I've got a knife lanyard on."
"What's a what?"
"Lanyard with a knife." I said, "and you'll find you'll be able to pull me out of this." Now, I was absolutely stark naked, except for this knife lanyard, and that's what actually saved me. Because he managed to catch hold of this lanyard at the back and just pulled me into the raft. And then we paddled around and we picked up a few more survivors. But I swear to this day that as dawn was breaking, I saw that sub. But there are other versions of other people that say it wasn't the submarine's conning tower I saw. It was the mast and the bridge of HMS Quentin that finally came to pick us up. But coming back to the torpedoing of her, when one listens to people shrieking and crying and screaming, you know, that one begins to realize the futility of war, really. Because it's so very hard to put into words what one actually feels at a particular time. That, you know, you hear of people saying, well, they cheered when they sank the U-boat. You don't really do that. Because you realize he's just a braver guy as you were. He's doing his job, you're doing yours. And the amazing thing is that this Captain Domes of the German U-boat that sunk Richard Martin is still alive today. He's about 83 or 84 years of age. And people of the Martin have contacted him and asked him why. And he indicated that it didn't mean that the torpedoes wasn't meant for us. They were meant for the KG-5. But we took all three.
What's happened to you aboard the Quentin? How did you get on board?
Well, it was they lowered their craft, their lifeboats picked us up. And there was only 63 of us anyway. Out of 260-odd, I think.
Was the Quentin a destroyer?
230 of us, they were. The Quentin was a destroyer, the Q-class destroyers, yeah. And she picked us up, and I didn't realize at that time that I was badly burnt as well. Because my overalls must have caught the light when the turret caught the light during the explosion. And it wasn't until I gave this young sailor, Jackie Amphlett, this lump of waste, and I said, "Wipe the oil off my back." And he did, and as he did, so the skin started coming off. Then I was taken to the sick bay where they clean me up a bit, stitch me head up where I'd been gashed. But on her, I would never ever go down below decks again. After that, I strictly stayed up on deck all the time. And if we went in for a meal, I used to grab my meal off the table and go outside with it. I was absolutely terrified. It's the experience that is so hard to put into words, you know. And I said, then we were taken to Gibraltar and put ashore there. We just became a non-entity as such. Nobody really wanted to know. Given these overalls and toothpaste, toothbrush, I think it was £2 we were given to go and spend. Then we waited there till some of them didn't return. Some of them stayed ashore in Gib, were transferred to, like most of the signal staff that were left in the telegraphy side of it, they were left there. Because there was lots of them being required on various merchant ships or being still going out there for communications between ship and shore or ship to ship. So a lot of those guys stayed behind, but most of the seamen came home. Even our first lieutenant that was saved, he came home with us. Got to Liverpool, and then from Liverpool we were sent back to Chatham.
We haven't said where the Martin was torpedoed.
Off Philippeville. Off Philippeville.
How long did it take you to recover from the sinking of the Martin?
I don't think I ever recovered, really. Well, maybe that's not quite true, because when I was given survivor's leave, I used to wake up the same time every morning, 3 minutes to 3, screaming. And this went on for quite a long while, really. But in saying that, when I got back to Chatham, and because I was waiting for my leading rate coming along then, and I had to go and do a higher gunnery course so that I could get the two rates together, you see. And that was 1943. Yeah, beginning of 1943. And that's when Rose and I got married in March. And shortly after that, I joined the Savage. Once again, to face northern waters.
The Savage was what kind of a ship?
She was a destroyer as well.
How did you?
Which was the 23rd destroyer flotilla she belonged to. And there was quite a... We served mainly as a flotilla. There was always nearly four of us together on our operations. But with the Martin, we were never as a flotilla. We never served as a flotilla. We were always odds. Either the Marn, the Milne, or the Matchless would be with us. Now, she was a nice ship as well. And we went through a lot, and to have survived it was a miracle in itself, really.
How did the armament and so on of the Savage compare with the Martin?
They were 4.25s, and she was an experimental ship, actually, I think, because they only had one gun turret aft, and everything was purely automatic aboard there. She was the first type of class to be built like it. And I probably think she was the only one to be built like it, because the sister ships didn't have the same armaments as we did. They had single-gun mountings, whereas we had a twin forward and two single guns aft, and they were 4.5s. But everything was joystick, the training and elevation of the guns were all joystick controls, so if the destroyer was knocked out, the turret captain could automatically handle things down there. So I joined her as a leading seaman, and my gunnery position aboard her was high angle director operator.
What did that involve?
Well, I was up in the director for mainly ACAC, against aircraft. And this is where I didn't see things taking place on the Martin and aerial attacks, I saw them on the Savage. Because the director position is open above you. So it was slightly different in that aspect that I could see what was going on around me.
So whereabouts on the ship exactly where you were located?
Right at as high as you could go on the bridge. Because you had a low angle director, which was for surface craft, surface action. Then you had the high angle one, which was to do with mainly aircraft or aerial attacks on the ship, defensive. But my job was also director layer as well of the main LA director. So when we were engaged in like anti-submarine war attacks, for instance, then I would be in the LA director, and then if I was in, if it was an air raid, I'd be upstairs in the HA director. And there was a layer aboard there, and you had a trainer, a range taker, and a gunnery control officer. So there's roughly four people to a crew of a director.
Who captained the Savage?
Commander Merrick, another brilliant man.
And did you go on Arctic convoy duties?
Oh yeah, we did about four or five with her. But they were not as hazardous as they were in the early part, as I was on board the Martin. Because the threat, I think, had been removed somewhat from up that part of the world, because the German capital ships were damaged, or the Tirpitz was badly damaged. So that only left one ship up there, which was the Scharnhorst, and a few destroyers and maybe a cruiser up in northern waters, but the remainder of them were moved down south for repair work. So the convoys wasn't so bad. It was mainly U-boat attacks at the convoy.
Was this in 1943 or
43. From May, I think, I joined the Savage. Yes, I think it was May. So after doing the same sort of routine aboard her and joining up with the 23rd Destroyer Flotilla, it was straight on a convoy work, really.
How many months were you doing Arctic convoys on the Savage?
Right up till... Can I just switch off a minute? 21st of March, 44 is when I left her. That was in Immingham when... It was after the battle. We did another convoy after that, I think.
Which battle was this?
That was the Battle of North Cape against the Scharnhorst.
Can you tell me in detail what you remember of the Battle of North Cape?
Well, I knew that we were informed in the morning by our captain that there was a German force at sea, and that she was engaging the convoy, that the Sheffield, the Belfast, and the Cumberland, another county-class cruiser, that was on patrol north of the convoy, had picked her up on radar and closed in to engage her, because she was deciding to attack the convoy at the time. And she damaged the county class cruiser, I think in the fourth or fifth salvo, but it still didn't prevent the three cruisers from chasing her towards the Duke of York, the Jamaica, and four S-class destroyers, of which the Savage was one of them, which we were on the screen. And it was dark, because it was in December, 25th, 26th of December, when the battle really commenced, about 5 in the evening, I think, 10 to 5, something like that. It was all over very shortly. But when the first star shell exploded above the Shawnors that was fired by the Duke of York, I was sitting in my director, looking out at the binoculars, and it was a sight that passed by, I never forget, because it was a magnificent looking ship. And she was not prepared for action, because her guns were fore and aft. Now, subsequently I learned that her director control area and the radar was damaged during the little battle that they had, three crews, that she had with the three cruisers. So probably she was a little bit unaware that we were in the vicinity. And when these exchange of shells took place between the Shawnost and the Duke of York, the Duke of York scored quite a few hits within a very short space of time. The Duke of York only had one hit received upon her, but that was rather fortunate for the Duke of York, because the shell didn't explode. It went right through the mast and the funnel, I think it was, where she... So they were lucky there. They didn't lose a person. But during the action, we were told to go in and do a torpedo attack. Now, this is suicidal, really, because one has to get into within a mile. And the four destroyers, there was the Sumarez, the Stord, the Scorpion, and the Savage. We attacked her from four positions. Two from the stern, one from the port stern, and one from the starboard stern, and two from the bows, one port, one starboard. So